Hello, and welcome to episode 49 of There Is No Offseason, a free-form podcast from Baseball Prospectus focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley, and I am joined by BP's fantasy manager and soon-to-be DraftKings loser, Brett Sayer, and my fellow authors, my favorite tequila shot partner, Mauricio Rubio, and Brian Joyner's newest man crush, Craig Goldstein. Good evening, guys. Say hi to everyone in a free-form way and tell them where they can find you on the interweb. And since we're just going crazy tonight, let's start with Mao.
Well, you can find me at Baseball Prospectus. You can also find me at BP Wrigleyville. And you can find me on Twitter at MRubio52. And Ben, why don't you tell us where we can find you?
We're just getting weird tonight. You can find me at Baseball Prospectus and at the Dynasty Guru and at BP Boston and on Twitter at Ben Carsley. Brett, let's get weird with it.
All right. You can find me at baseballprospectus.com, thedynastyguru.com, on Twitter at Dynasty Guru, and constantly at the bottom of the DraftKings standings everywhere. Craig, you?
You can find me at Baseball Prospectus, at the Dynasty Guru, and at Fox Sports/MLB. You can find me on Twitter at CD Goldstein. That's CD as in callous disregard. Goldstein. I'm going to free form give it back to Ben.
That was a nice handoff. It was very smooth. I like your commitment to reading your internet places the same way, even though we switched up the format. The cadence was perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah. You can find this podcast on Twitter via the aptly named at Tino Podcast handle. And you can ask us questions and talk to us about your feelings by emailing us at tinopodcast@gmail.com. So we're just going crazy tonight. We just started talking about baseball, and we thought, you know, why be shackled by the restraints that our structure places on us at this point? We're 49 episodes in. We're all friends. So I think we're just going to go with it. Do you want to do reader emails now, or should we do something else first? Because I'm feeling it. I mean, it's up to you guys. We can put this up to a vote.
A Steven vote?
No, not Steven vote. He's
that's not going to catch on, Brett. Anyone else have a feeling?
I say we go with the emails.
Well, has anyone else? Wait, before we get into the emails, has anyone else seen these Oakland commercials with the Steven vote referee thing?
No, I don't watch Oakland commercials.
No, what's the point? What's the
Oh, I don't know. I just thought it was a really strange commercial where the Oakland players are doing strange things, and then Steven Vogt is dressed as a referee, like flagging them for stuff. It seems like it's just going to be funny with no real payoff, and then all of a sudden it's Steven Vogt referee bobblehead night at some point in the second half of May.
Do the A's think that referees vote?
Is this real, or are you going through like Pepsi One withdrawals?
No, this is real. Are you and Mike having tandem breakdowns, and yours just isn't on Twitter?
Yeah, yours is in more than 140 characters at a time.
You know, I hung out with Mike this weekend.
Oh, that's right. You had the event.
I wasn't actually at the event, but he came back. He came into Chicago, and he shut down a karaoke bar.
Didn't he only attend the baseball game for, like, an inning and a half?
I don't know. I can't confirm that. I do know that man really likes to sing Pearl Jam.
I would have liked to see that.
I would not.
For a short amount of time.
it's on Instagram.
Oh, well, no.
You've already called my bluff. I'm not going to watch. All right. Our first email is from John Ackerman, who says, "Dear Fantastic Four, first off, I just want to say that I have been listening to the podcast since day one, and though that's a bad look. And though they all said it couldn't be done, you seem to keep getting better and better. Oh God, poor John. Also, I credit you all for winning back-to-back championships in my league, humble brag, and I am in serious contention once again this year. Here's my question. I'm in a 20-team dynasty league with 35-man rosters. There are a few teams comprised primarily of prospects, so there is very little ability to add young talent without dealing the guys who are keeping me in contention. Here's the catch. I am number one in the waiver order. Do you anticipate any players along the lines of Aruzny Castillo, like last year, who are probably not in the current player pool, but whom I can add later in the season so that I may continue my quest for league domination? Thanks so much and keep up the great work, John. Very flattering email, reeks of desperation in terms of wanting it to get read. So much so that I'm sort of tempted to just skip it now that we've read it, but I'm not that cruel. So Craig, despite the fact that we're playing fast and loose with the rules, you know, I want to make people feel safe and welcome here, so why don't you lead us off?
Okay, well, I want to note a couple things here. That first of all, he credits us for winning back-to-back championships in his league, but we've only been going for like a year.
But that's okay, because like if we're gonna get, I'm okay with.
I mean, I'm okay with the credit. I just think I thought that was interesting, and
It's back pay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm interested in that, and then I'm gonna pose something. I'm gonna broach a topic that I want to discuss after we get to the answers, and that's which one of the Fantastic Four.
Like, oh God, you stole it.
Yeah. Okay. So we're gonna get to that. But okay. For John, I'm just gonna say one name. Because it's the biggest name for me, but the broader answer to me would be basically all the J2 guys and anyone who is eligible from Cuba but is signing after the January 2nd deadline. And the big name for me is Yadier Alvarez. There are rumors that the Dodgers have convinced him to wait until after July 2nd, to sign so that they can not affect their upcoming pool and can just blow past their international spending allotment. And so he's the name I'd be looking at to kind of headline that class. Although I will defer to Brett if he has a different answer. He tends to know the international scene a little better. But he's like 93 to 96, and his slider was really impressive in a video that Kylie McDaniel posted earlier this year. So that's my answer. I'll throw it over to Brett to see if he's got anyone else or a differing point of view.
Yeah, I mean, part of it depends on who was available in your draft. I know there are some leagues where Hector Olivera was available, some leagues where he wasn't. He's probably taken, but if he's not, he's the number one guy there. Andy Ibañez is another interesting name. He's a youngish second baseman. Not huge fantasy upside, but can hit for average and has some, you know, a little bit of power and speed, but nothing you want to use the number. Nothing that makes him a slam dunk number one waiver priority. Alvarez is really the guy. He's got pretty top shelf fastball, breaking ball from what I've seen, and if the package comes along, he looks like he could be a he could be a borderline top of the rotation guy in time. I mean, I think he's 19 now, but yeah, he should sign before the end of the regular season. So that's probably the guy you want to have your eye out. Mal.
I think that those two names are, you know, the biggest ones and most of the J2 signings. I think that if you're really looking at someone that you want to flip and, you know, just on name value, I think Vladimir Guerrero Jr., I'm not exactly in love with the player, but I think he's going to be someone that will garner a little bit of attention just on name value alone as well. Alvarez is also kind of the guy for me too, though, just in kind of studying this out. Really quickly, though, before I kick this out to Ben and we get a little bit weird with it, I do want to note one thing. You mentioned that even though they all said it couldn't be done in your email, that line, they includes us. We also said that we could not get better, that this is probably as good as it was going to get. So I would deeply apologize.
And I would contend we held true to that.
Yeah, we have. I don't think we've gotten much better. Like we've.
Well, I think we're better than week one, but we're no better than week five.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah. We all do. Yeah.
Yeah, I would wait to see where Moncada signs, and then I'd probably consider him somewhere early up in this pool.
Brett, now, where would you rank Moncada?
Yeah, in this pool of players that's undefined, where would Moncada rank?
Fourth.
That's a strong play. Okay, so my initial take on the Fantastic Four, and this is obviously Brett is the leader, stretchy guy. Mao is the giant rock. Craig is the woman, and I am the cocky flame guy.
Thoughts? No, no, I would go the other way around. Craig is definitely Cocky Flame Guy.
Ooh, I do have the hot takes.
Yeah, he's absolutely Cocky Flame Guy.
Not sure I see it. He's not young and spry. I'm not spry, but I'm young.
I would say, given that it's coming out as a movie shortly, I think I am the most like Michael B. Jordan. And thus, I am like the...
I've always said that about you.
Yeah.
So weird.
I mean, it's funny, you know, I've been called the Michael B. Jordan of this podcast.
And several times.
So, yeah, several times.
Chris Coughlin just did a thing. Coughlin, whatever.
Many people, tens of people are Googling Michael B. Jordan and are tremendously disappointed by the result.
Why do they not? No, they should know who he is. He's fantastic.
Are we all in agreement that Brett is stretchy arm guy and Mao is rock guy?
Yeah, I don't think that was much of a debate.
I think that makes the most sense.
All right, so Brett, I mean, the tiebreaker is up to you here.
By the way, that's Reed Richards. I mean, can we get some names going here?
Yeah.
All right, choose to be offended over what you will. Brett, this is up to you. Are you also in agreement that Craig is the fireman and I am the woman, or is this a tie?
Yeah, no, I think Craig's the Human Torch.
Really?
Yeah. No, so I
float around and make force fields all day. That's what I'm good for. Also, I think we're having an affair, Brett. Actually, I'm okay with it. Never mind.
I think we get married.
Yeah, you guys are married. Yeah, Sue Storm and Reed Richards are a thing.
I'm totally on board all of a sudden.
Also, Ben, Sue, three letters. It just makes sense. Illuminati.
Of course, if that's the case, the thing is named Ben Grimm, so, you know.
Oh, which actually is, well, it's not my persona on this podcast, so. It's too real.
But I think, also, Ben, this means that you and I are siblings, which I think
also fitting.
It makes the most amount of sense, yeah.
All right, well, I'll take the L this time.
Yeah, okay, so that'll work.
That went better than it had any right to. Like, I thought that was going to devolve.
I think that could be the Tino podcast.
Better than it went right to?
Yeah. That's...
All right. Next question is from Matt. Matt says, "Hey, nerds," which, you know, you're writing into a fantasy baseball podcast, so let's keep that in perspective. "Hey, nerds, wondering if you could provide some feedback on this Dynasty trade. 13-team league, already a shitty league, 5x5 OBP, and I got in this year via a 3-team dispersal draft as the league expanded, 37-man rosters. I just traded Todd Frazier and Luke Gregerson for Javi Baez and Jameson Taillon. My thinking was to buy low on Baez and that he was probably a better player that would have gone top 6 in the dispersal draft in early March. Now he's some sort of bust after a bad spring, which I don't understand. Also interested to hear what you guys think. Any advice on what I might do with this team going forward would be welcome. I figure I might have a team to start contending in 2 or 3 years, so I'm going to make moves with that in mind. Thanks, Matt." Mao, you're a huge nerd. Why don't you kick us off with this Baez central question?
This is all about the Sue Storm comment, isn't it? You know, I think in an OBP league, this trade just kind of takes a couple of notches back just because of Javier Baez's, you know, propensity to not be much use to be in OBP leagues. He's not going to be an asset there. The approach isn't really there for him to draw a ton of walks. So, you know, he's done a little bit better in his very, very brief stint in Iowa. There's, you know, some signs of life going on. I like the trade, but I don't love it as much as I would in kind of an average league. You know, Baez is, I mean, this is, you know, Todd Frazier is a good player, but that, I mean, this is a pretty clear buy low candidate. And does anyone know when Jameson Taillon is coming back? Because I forgot what his timetable is looking like.
Taillon is probably going to start throwing to hitters in the next 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah,
2 to 3 weeks.
So I mean, it's.
So I think he'll probably be in an actual minor league game by July.
Yeah, so I mean, it's okay. Yeah, like it's an okay trade. I understand the thinking here. I, you know, just given the construction of your team, I think I kind of get where you were trying to go. And who would have guessed what Marcus Semien was going to do over the first couple of weeks? But you know, I like it. I don't love it. Craig, what about you?
Yeah, I thought this was the reason I liked this question was basically, you know, what. Where we all kind of see Baez at this point, because Russell, you know, Russell's in at second base, and that's not to say he can't play somewhere else or that they can't move things around to make room for Baez. But I think he's in kind of a precarious position, at least in Chicago. And obviously he's dealing with a serious tragedy and he's a sensitive kid. So, it'll be interesting to see kind of how that all plays out. I think I don't love the deal. I'm not even sure I would say all right because of kind of the struggles Baez has had at the major league level. I understand it's a relatively small sample size, but the things that we basically were concerned about were all taking place. And Todd Frazier has become, a really good player. And as much as I love Taillon and the idea of buying low here, the now value of Frazier and Gregerson is pretty substantial. And it's a huge upside play. And if maybe your risk tolerance is better than mine. And in a 13 team league, obviously, upside plays even more than it would in deeper leagues. But I don't know. It's not a deal that I love. Am I being too hard on in too small a sample on Baez, Ben?
I think it's, to me, the key is what you just said. It's a 13-team league, which is right on the cusp of being acceptable in terms of really shooting for upside, but it's still there for me. And I agree with you that Frazier, I think, is still fairly underrated even to this day, but I am still I'm still in love with Baez. Taillon isn't really the calling card for me here. I just think this isn't a crazy price to pay for Baez upside if you're not trying to compete right away. Gregerson's a bottom-tier closer. He's fine for this year. It wouldn't shock me if he has no value at this point next year. So I really basically look at this as like Frazier for Baez, and if you're trying to win this year or next year, that's a bad move. But if you're building out in the long term in Dynasty, I don't totally hate it.
Yeah, no, yeah, I agree with that line of thinking.
Yeah, I would lean the Frazier side here, but it's certainly not a terrible trade in either direction.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with that. I would lean Frazier as well, but it's justifiable to me.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. But I do think that what you said about Frazier kind of being undervalued here, he's already at 10 home runs. He's still running. He's four for four in stolen bases. He's not hitting for average right now, but the power is substantial. I don't know. It's an interesting deal. It's an interesting deal.
Yeah. To build off of this, we talked a little bit about this. I think it was last episode when we one of the emails was about Jerickson Profar and sort of what happens when a top prospect loses his shine almost completely. Are we starting to get to that point with Baez? Because it feels like the way people are valuing him that he's almost already a bust, which is crazy. I mean, he may bust anyway, but thinking of him as a bust now is just dumb.
No, I'll be honest with you, and sorry to cut you off there. Like, I think that a lot of people were there as soon as they saw it, because like you can read about it and you can hear it and you can kind of understand it, but once you see Javier Baez going up there with no plan of attack and just swinging at everything and being overly aggressive at the plate and swinging at fastballs that he's got no chance of catching up to, and seeing what major league pitchers can do to him, I think that scared a lot of people because it's like, holy shit, this guy has a long way to go. So it's when you see it, it becomes more visceral, and your reaction to what you're seeing is going to be stronger because it's just right there in front of you. And instead of reading about over aggressiveness, you're actually seeing over aggressiveness. And I think that for a lot of people, trying to figure out how that player projects out against major league pitching, once you see him against major league pitching, becomes more difficult because the gap between where he is right now and where he can be is difficult. Like it's high.
And not even projects out, but when you see someone fail the way and the style that he failed, it's hard to fathom that they could ever just hit a major league pitching that's not a mistake, right? It's hard to be like, well, how is that? That's just not going to work. But the thing is about Baez is that he's always kind of flailed miserably upon reaching a new level and then made adjustments to at least get to the point where there's success along with the failure. And so I certainly agree with your point, Brett. It's way too early to be calling him a bust or to be bailing on him. What was interesting to me about this deal was that I think, well, he is an undervalued asset. I think the same could be said of Frazier, who was providing current value. So that was kind of, I think, what you, Ben, and I, and to some extent Mao was saying as well. But yeah, I do think it's too early for people to be bailing on him in that capacity.
Yeah, I think people forget that the fact that Baez was in the majors last year, it was already a very aggressive promotion. I think Baez's age is frequently lost in the conversation. And Craig, I totally agree with you that when someone fails spectacularly, is probably the wrong word here, but that ugly, if that makes a sense, like the way he fails, it's not pretty. It's awful, and that makes you be more reserved than someone who just, you know, hits a lot of groundouts or hits a lot of pop ups. But it doesn't change the ultimate upside.
And I just my last thought on this, because I've probably talked about this for too long. There's also the inkling in me that this also might be a guy who has to go through four organizations before he figures anything out. You know, it's you know, when you see it like that, I can see that happening as well. So I do have concern, but I'm not going to label him a bust.
That's the most down I've ever heard you on Baez.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because it's, you know, that's a player that I really like. I just also, you know, just considering what Theo Epstein in this front office did with Starlin Castro, and kind of not the box, but the preference that they have in terms of player. Like, I don't think Baez really fits that mold. And even if he does, even if they decide to ride it out with him, I don't know if they're really well equipped to deal with that type of player. But I mean, I don't know. I could be wrong. But I think he's got a long road.
All right. I'm going to move us on to something we've talked about a little less frequently than Baez, which is biscuits. And this question is from Brady, which, against our better judgment, we're going to let a Brady question go here. It's Brady, but we can mock people who use syrup on biscuits? Question mark?
No, well, that was me talking about Brady.
That's amazing. Oh, God, that's even better. Brady says, do you eat your biscuits with syrup or gravy, Brady? Oh, right. Man, that's so good. Leave this in. That's too good.
That's insane.
Brady knows. Brady knows.
Yeah, no, Brady knows what he's done, so we're cool with it. Yeah, no, this is that's a garbage take. You don't use syrup.
It wasn't a take. It was yeah.
It's a garbage proposition.
Well, I guess we should. None of us use syrup on biscuits, right?
I have never heard of that.
No.
I've heard jam. Put some jam on there, some preserves. Well,
jam makes sense because it's bread-like. Like, not in the way that a pancake is.
Mm-hmm.
No, jam, listen, I would rather have gravy than jam, but you're not going to ever... You're not going to ever catch me disrespecting the jam on a biscuit choice. Like, that's still something cultured people do. People syrup on biscuits.
For me, it's butter or gravy or butter and gravy.
I was going to say there's no way that or it factors in for you.
Well, I'll take I'll take gravy with no butter. I mean, that's fine.
Well, you are. That's that new diet you're on.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought it was time. But yeah, I want someone to write in who uses syrup on biscuits and explain themselves.
I want to ask this to Twitter, but I also don't want to ask this to Twitter.
No, don't. Dude.
Don't. That's a terrible idea.
Don't.
Yeah, who do you think you are, me?
I mean, no, but a lot of people try to be you, and it's not a good idea.
That's also
very true. They should. Yeah. That's so weird because I don't even want to be me.
Yeah, like it's cool. Like Craig, they made a Craig. Like that's it. Like Craig's persona on Twitter is the only one that works like that. Like you can't be Craig. You can't.
I broke the mold.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, what are you supposed to, like...
It's a cheap, shitty mold, but it broke.
You broke something.
But it's cheap and it's shitty, but it works in a cheap and shitty way, which, you know...
You're like a Walmart mold.
Yeah, but a lot of people shop at Walmart.
Or like a dive bar, like a dive bar mold.
Oh my God, Craig is Walmart. Craig is the Walmart of Twitter.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Oh no. Wow. Would you rather put syrup or gravy on Enya?
Both.
Welcome back to episode 49 of There Is No Offseason, the Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast focused exclusively on Keeper and Dynasty League formats. How did I do, Ben?
You messed up the phrasing, but you got the core message across, so I'm proud of you.
Awesome. So now we are going to do another under 25 list. I have Ben's rankings in front of me. I have Craig's rankings in front of me. If you are listening to this, well, when it comes out, you'll have the rankings in front of you because it's more fun that way. So this is how we're going to go. I'm going to ask each of them questions about their rankings, and then Mao is going to ask more questions, then get a little weird, and then we're going to move on. So we have not shockingly, we have two Cubs at one and two on each list. But I guess the first question is about Chris Bryant. We'll do this really quickly. When do you think Chris Bryant becomes the most valuable player in the NL Central? Or I guess conversely, if you don't think it happens, then say that as well. Ben?
I will say he achieves that status by... Oh, it's a good question. Early to mid 2017?
Craig?
2019. Early 2019. I think, and I just think Anthony Rizzo is going to be really good. And if he's going to keep running, then I don't know. Getting like 10 stolen bases at that point, I don't know how different their home runs are going to be until Brian is maybe in his mid to late 20s and in that prime area as opposed to his like early and mid 20s. So the speed helps Rizzo out there.
Is that a phrase you ever thought you'd hear yourself saying?
No, it's mostly upsetting is how I would quantify it, but he keeps running and I don't know what to say about it.
Yeah. We've seen this before from some players. This isn't unusual. You get guys who, you know, are reasonably high baseball IQ guys who just use their wits to their advantage. I think there was a season. I think Albert Pujols had a year where he stole like 17 or 18 bases. I want to say. Maybe back in 2006.
But he consistently stole 10, right? Okay, so he... Okay, not consistently. But he had 16 in 2005, 16 in 2009, 14 in 2010, 9 in 2011, and 2012. He had 5 stolen bases last year. Rizzo has 7 stolen bases in 31 games, and that's a career high. He had 5 last year and 6 the year before.
But Pujols had 13 in combined in his first 4 seasons.
Yep.
So yep. Maybe I mean if he's trending like Pujols did and he can, you know, sort of average. Yeah.
Oh, that's part of what I'm factoring steals. In. Yeah.
But it's a thing. It's a thing that's happened. It's a thing that can happen in this case. You know, Rizzo's a smart base runner. It doesn't matter whether he's like a 30 or 35 runner.
That might have gone up, actually. It's kind of the same thing that happened with Todd Frazier. I think Mike was talking about this with Flags Fly Forever, and Todd Frazier got in shape and started running, right? So,
they changed coaches, right? So they let him run, or they encouraged him to run, right?
That was
supposedly the difference there.
Yeah, there's some of that, too. I think that Rizzo actually did legitimately show up in the best shape of his life, as much as that gets left off. And, you know, I think a lot of the things that happened last year between the injuries towards the end of the year and, you know, just some of the general fatigue that I guess he was feeling. He dedicated himself to getting into better shape and so he can go through an entire season and start stealing some bases, which is, it's funny. It's very funny because pitchers still don't, they don't care yet. They still don't care.
All
right, well. We don't really need, yeah.
Well, Mal's recording this, right?
No, Ben is.
I'm hosting it. I'm hosting it. I'm not recording it.
Yeah, Mal's recording it.
I'm recording it, yeah. What happened?
Oh, okay.
You died for like.
You left us, Mal.
10 seconds.
No, I'm fine. I just basically said he showed up in good shape, and he's running, and pitchers still don't care, so.
Sounds good. All right. Should we just go, or do you want to count me down? What do you want to do?
Well, I think we should count back in because you probably can edit that part out.
Yeah, just go in five and go with your next guy.
Okay.
So let's go in five.
All right. So before we move off Brian entirely, Addison Russell is ranked highly in this list. They're going to share an infield likely for a while. If there was a U25 eyes ranking, who would be number one, Bryant or Russell?
Bryant.
I think you have to go Bryant. Which is not a slight against.
No, not
Addison.
At all. Not at all. But Bryant's eyes are, I mean, they're Matt Kempian almost in my estimation.
Yeah, it's not particularly close, and that's just astonishing.
It is. It definitely overshadows Russell, which is a shame because he does not deserve to be overshadowed. But such is life.
There's just a lot of greatness in Chicago when it comes to the eye game right now.
Yeah. So let's talk about Addison Russell. Ben, you have Russell at six. Craig, you have him at three. Craig, how many 20-plus home run seasons do you think Addison Russell has in his career?
Five.
Ben, same question.
I was going to say four. Sorry, I can't lead to more of a debate.
Sounds good. So where is it, Ben, is it a matter of liking the other guys in front of him better, or do you guys see Russell as the same player and just have some slight disagreements on the other guys, or?
We don't really know. We haven't discussed it.
Yeah, we haven't discussed it. I love Garrett Cole, like, to death. I think Polanco's a superstar. As I refine this list, I think Castro is going to move down, honestly. So it wouldn't surprise me if when this list goes live, I have Russell like one or two spots ahead of Castro. I don't think we view him terribly differently. I just really, really love both Garrett Cole and Polanco. Craig, how do you feel?
I love Polanco. I love Cole. I just think what Russell can provide from the middle of the infield is I think it's going to be undervalued a lot because I don't know how many home runs he's going to end up with all the time, but I do think that he's going to provide a lot of power, even if it's not always home run power. And so I think that might get overlooked when you're talking about the five standard categories, but it's going to lead to him driving in a lot of runs, scoring a lot of runs because he's going to be in those positions a lot. So I'm a really big Addison Russell fan. I'm obviously not alone in that. I really like what he's going to be able to offer from the middle infield.
Yeah, I have no issue with where you ranked Russell in sort of these three or four guys are all like one tier to me. So I mean, I think it's totally fine. And if he ends up with the best fantasy career out of those guys, it wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That makes sense.
All right. So let's move down beyond some of the bigger names. Craig, you have Colton Wong and Jorge Soler in the top 10. Ben, you do not. Let's start with Wong. How much better than what we've seen so far from Wong can he get? And where do you think that places him among second basemen in the next couple of years?
That's a good question. I don't know how much better he can get. I mean, he posted in 430 at bats. He had 12 homers and 20 stolen bases last year. That's insanely valuable, especially if you prorate it over the course of a whole season. He did that while hitting 250, and the interesting part of that is that he basically, what coming up was thought to be a questionable power guy, like 12 homers would have been probably seen as the high-end output, and a good hit tool guy. This year, he's been extremely, you know, he's hitting 336 right now, but he's still slugging 518. I don't think either of those numbers really hold, but I do think he can be a 290 to 300 hitter. And again, I think he can be a 10 to 12 home run guy, and I think he can steal 20 bases year in and year out. And I think that's a really valuable player. So that's kind of where I see him. How that is different from today kind of depends on what you think of, you know, today. But that's mostly what I see out of him. Ben, what do you see that you have him further down? Is it just that you value that less, or do you think some of this is overstated at this point?
No, I was glad to hear you say, I still think somewhere in like the 10 to 14 homer range is his ceiling. I think probably closer to 10 on a regular basis moving forward. And I do think he's hugely valuable. I just really like a lot of the other guys on this list. Like,
it's a really talented.
For me, this list is really, really strong and pretty much all the way through, but especially until you get to like 20. So I have Wong at 13. You have him at 8. I think the average of those two rankings is like perfect, honestly. I have him, you know, behind Segura, Baez, Waka, and Soler. I think I definitely have him behind probably Segura and Waka, but like, you know, Baez, Soler, Wong, it's another instance where those guys are all in the same grouping to me, and I think Wong has a really high floor. I just sold out a little bit for ceiling above him.
There's nothing wrong with selling out for ceiling.
It's what I do all the time.
Yeah.
I'm usually wrong.
Speaking of selling out for ceiling, Tyler Glasnow certainly has plenty of ceiling, but he also carries plenty of risk. You guys have him, you know, similarly enough ranked. Ben, you have him a little bit higher than Craig, but both in that 15 to 20 range in this list. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most nervous, how nervous are you if you're a Glasnow owner that he just doesn't come anywhere near his ceiling that he flashes in the minors?
I'm probably a 7 in terms of him not reaching his ceiling, but I'm only like a 2 in terms of him not being valuable at all.
Okay. Craig, same question, and then I'll get to my next question.
I mean, you and I actually talked about him earlier this week. I just traded him in my NL only league for Alex Wood and AJ Ramos. And I basically did that because I felt like I'm really concerned. His numbers are great, but his control really concerns me. And I think there's totally the fallback of him being a dominant closer is 100% there. But even then, like, the history of guys with huge control problems who throw really hard with great stuff, you know, they flame out at closer sometimes too, and they usually get a bunch of chances and will accrue value in a lot of different ways. But once you put him in that reliever bin, it's still a unpredictable way that he's going to accrue value. And so I just, it's a really high risk, profile to me in terms of providing that kind of value. And that's kind of why I have him further down than I think most people might think. And I would assume it's the same reason that Ben has him further down than most people would think too.
Yeah, and I'm on that same boat as well. So I guess the natural next question is, if Glasnow does not hit his ceiling, do we think he's more of a, do we think he's likely going to be a closer, or do we think he's going to be a inconsistent high strikeout starter?
If he doesn't hit his ceiling, to me, he's gonna be a super frustrating back end starter for 3 years before someone finally just does shruggy face and throws him in the bullpen. So I think his ultimate role will be a closer, but I think he's very unlikely to break into the majors as a reliever.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think it could move a little bit faster, especially because some of those guys, I mean, it depends on the team, you know, on what the Pirates pitching situation is. You know, he's one of those guys that if Taillon works out and they have a full rotation that they're happy with, you know, they might start with Glasnow in the bullpen, and if he excels there, you know, maybe he stays there. It could be one, or, you know, if they have an abundance of other options, they might be quicker to move him than Ben is saying. But I think, assuming that there's a spot open for him or that they need him in the rotation, 2 or 3 years of flailing or wild inconsistency, before he ends up in the bullpen makes sense. Yeah.
Just to balance this out a little bit, I don't think of myself as someone who's super high on Glasnow, but just to balance it out, like, if it does click, he's a number two fantasy starter, so that's why he's,
if it clicks, he might be more
list. Yeah, he might be more than one fantasy starter if it really clicks,
because the ability to miss bats is incredible.
Sure. I'm worried about the whip even if he clicks, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Sounds good. Yeah, the guy that comes to mind when I think about Glasnow, and, you know, this, the I'm going to say the name and people are going to either say, okay, that would be a good outcome, or I don't really like that, but I think of AJ Burnett.
I was about to say it as a guy who
you know, everyone expected more from because of his raw stuff, but he just never could take that step to be an ace. But
until 2015.
Yeah, until he connected with Ray Searage. So, fortunately,
no, I was 100% thinking AJ Burnett the whole time you were talking.
No, it's very apt.
Yeah, I know it's you know, Burnett's a guy that probably gets more comps than he should, just because, you know, it's kind of easy to say, oh, this guy's got good stuff, but he might not quite have the, you know, command or control to put it together. But people, I think, forget how good Burnett's stuff was when he was a prospect, and how good it even is now as a 36, 37 year old. It's
absolutely.
So let's go a little bit further down the list. I want to talk about Jimmy Nelson. He's, Craig, you have him a bit higher than Ben, but he's a guy who strikes me as someone who is sort of teetering on the edge of breaking out into being a potential, you know, number two, number three fantasy starter if things go really well. We'll start with Craig. Where do you see him on the breakout scale, and is he someone who you think can be an NSP3 in relatively short order?
Yeah, I mean, I think he could be there this year. His first three starts were kind of spectacular. He had a blow up game in his fourth start where he gave up 7 runs in 2 1/3 innings, but even after that, he's still giving up some runs. His last start, he gave up 4 runs in 7 innings, but he struck out 11 and walked 1. And this is a guy whose bugaboo was always control, and he's really he walked five in that one blow up start where he gave up seven runs. Aside from that, you know, he's really been pretty good on the whole in terms of limiting the free passes, and he's missing a ton of bats. So I know his ERA is a little ugly, but right now, but I think he's a guy that the reason I have him as high as I do is I think the value can be returned immediately, and I think it can be held for a decent period of time. And I think, you know, he's someone who last year kind of jumped on our radars because he was throwing harder and his slider consistency took a step forward. And I think, you know, those things are carrying forward into this year. And he's someone who I really like going forward.
Ben?
Yeah, I think I'm just worried he's always... Craig's points are well-founded, and quite honestly, at this point, have me considering moving him up a little bit in my board. I don't think I realized that dichotomy in his starts, that he was good for so many starts and blew up in one. But I just get the sense that that's also him. Like, he's going to look he's going to look dazzling at times, then he's going to completely implode, and that means he certainly still has his usefulness, but at the end of the day, I think a number three starting pitcher is his ceiling. I don't see anything more than that because of the damage he's likely to do in WHIP and in an ERA to a certain extent. So I have him at 22, and I'm looking at that, and I think that's a little low, and I'm looking at Craig having him at 15 and thinking that's a little high. So to me, that tells me once again the aggregate is sort of right. I mean, I just consider him a risky, high-upside mid-rotation fantasy starter, and there are a lot of those.
Well, who knew Ben was Mr. Gotta Hear Both Sides?
I know. It's just not a bold podcast for me. I'm sorry. I'll try to end on a hot take.
All right. One last question, and I'll turn it over to Mal. Craig, you have 15 seconds to defend why Orlando Arcia is above Kyle Schwarber. Go.
I mean, I did it further down in the article, but he's gotten better with his hit tool every time. He can run. He's a shortstop. And I think he makes hard contact and filled out a bit. And so I'm not worried about him getting the bat knocked out of his hands.
All right.
I don't understand how Tom Brady gets four games, but Arcia is rated ahead of Schwarber and Hitler got nothing.
Nice.
What
nice
about Hillary's back. Emails?
Did Arcia do Benghazi?
Can Schwarber melt jet fuel? Or no, that's not how that goes. Swing and a miss, much like Schwarber.
Ooh. For the both of you, and I want to start with Craig, what is a realistic expectation from a fantasy sense for Robert Stevenson?
He's the kind of guy I have him ranked right behind Glass now because I don't really know. He is someone I thought was a sure starter a few years ago, and now it seems like people are, you know, kind of wavering on that. He might be a back end arm. He's like completely lost control of the strike zone the last couple years. I mean, right now he's at 17% in his second tour of Double A. It's early. I'm not panicking entirely yet, but his raw ability is that of a number two starter. But if he's not going to be able to locate the ball within the zone, much less in the zone at all, it's going to be a real problem because apparently, you know, Double A hitters are able to square up velocity, and major league hitters are going to punish it. So, I don't know entirely what he is in the long term, but where I ranked him is basically a hedge between it's factoring in timetable in that if he performs, I don't even think he needs to click completely, but if he performs, he's someone who can be in the majors. I mean, next year, and if he clicks, he can be highly valuable in that role. So the downside is that he's a reliever, and all the things I said about Glasnow as a reliever also apply to him.
He is white Aaron Sanchez.
Oh, that's...
Yeah. Okay. One of the other guys that I wanted to talk about here... I think he's a podcast favorite, but Jason Hayward is ranked at 7 for the both of you. can he realistically hop into the top five, and what does he have to do to get there?
I see the Florida Ben because he's the Jason Hayward guy.
Yeah, that's actually who I wrote about in terms of someone I wanted to rank higher. That's usually a platform that Craig and I reserve for, you know, people who just miss our list or something. He's just a much better real-life player than he is a fantasy player because in 5x5 leagues, you know, the fact that he's patient and gets on base is helpful but not quite as helpful, and his all-world defense is a moot point. So I like Hayward a lot. You know, no one's going to forget that 2013 season when he was insanely valuable, but while I think he can reach the same average he showed in 2013 and the same power production he showed in 2013 and probably the same like stolen base total he showed in 2013 again,
Do you mean 2012?
Yeah, sorry. 2012. I'm not sure he's going to do that all again at once. So I really think of him as someone who is an outfield three at this point, and he's a high-end outfield three because he'll always have that potential to be more. But I have a hard time ranking him above people who I think have much, much higher ceilings.
Yeah, right? I mean, for me, it's just that I don't know that the power is ever really going to be there. He's at 371 slugging right now. After a full year last year, he had 384. Even if he improves to, I don't know, 400, 410, I mean, what kind of player are we talking about and how valuable is it? You know, he can contribute to all five categories, but the average isn't that great. It might not hurt you, but he's, you know, maybe the runs if he hits in the two hole all year, but then, you know, his RBIs aren't going to be that impressive. And, you know, I don't know. It's a little less than we all thought it was going to be, and it's disappointing, but there's still value there, which is why he's in the top 10. And I think, you know, kind of what Ben and I are saying is that we're hedging to keep him in the top 10 because the upside is still there, but, you know, as is, which might be all it is, it's somewhat tepid.
Craig, I'm gonna stay with you here. Where is Zerismendi Alcantara gonna rank on this list a year from now?
I don't know. He was super fucking terrible this year, and I don't know that he gets a ton of playing time going forward with Russell performing, and I expect him to improve as the year goes on. I still really like the skill set, and I'm not quitting on it, and that's, you know, that's why I have him where I do, but I don't... God damn it, Ben, what are you doing?
What?
Ben, you gotta stop shaking your...
stuff? I don't know what you're eating, or...
literally haven't moved. I'm watching Shane Victorino suck at fucking outfield.
Then you're making noises somehow because of that.
Maybe it's
Brett.
I don't know. Stationary in my bed.
It might be.
I've been literally on mute for the last 5 minutes.
I've definitely been on mute. It's got to be Ben. Let's just blame Ben anyway. But anyway, back to
anyway,
just make a force field around your keyboard.
All right, you're gonna pay for that, Brett. You're sleeping on the couch tonight, Brett.
But just because you're invisible doesn't mean no one can hear you.
That's what invisible means, Craig. Read a book.
Okay. But yeah, I still believe in the skill set. Where is he going to rank next year? I don't. Probably the same place because he probably won't have another major league at bat. I don't know. I still like him long term, and that's where how I'm justifying it.
Excellent, Ben. When you're done battling the fly that is hovering around your mic,
flies work.
Oh, that's exactly how they work. How many starts is Carlos Martinez going to make over the next 3 years?
Including the rest of this year, I will say he makes 69 starts.
Nice.
No, but really, I think he's going to bounce around as a starter for a while. I mean, there's... at this point, see what you got in him, right? I mean, I guess if he really blows up over his next 10 or so starts, maybe a move back to the bullpen is permanent. But if he shows some ability to stick in the rotation, they have every reason to keep him there for a while. So I'm confident he's going to be a starter at least for the next few years. And I think he's going to be a good, not a great one. I think he's going to be a very effective real-life number three starter.
All right. The last question I have for the two of you. I'm just going to leave Alex Reyes on the floor there. But let's say Giancarlo Stanton was magically transported into the NL Central. Would the NL Central be the best-looking division in all of baseball?
That's tough. I mean, you're taking a good-looking man and putting him in a good-looking division. I guess I can't this quickly like filter all other good-looking people by division in my head. That's what I'm really struggling with. It's certainly not the AL East.
Here's my question. Do people who are unattractive count against this in this situation? Or is it more of like... is it the best collection of handsome?
Let's just go with best collection of handsome because there's some really ugly 25th men on rosters.
I think the NL West has some pretty good looking guys.
The Royals just got Drew Butera, right? So they just
Sky plus Hosmer. Plus
yeah, Hosmer's a different kind of handsome.
Adam Eaton is handsome.
That's a weird handsome.
Why is that a weird handsome?
It's a rough face. It's rough treading.
I don't agree with
that. I think the NL West has... I mean, we already talked about Matt Kemp, but I think there are some other guys in that. I think Andre Ethier's a good-looking guy.
He's all right.
I feel like the NL East has some stuff, too, even outside of Stanton.
Harper. Well, I mean...
Yeah, Harper is nothing.
Harper's a handsome guy.
And Harvey.
We have not forgotten about Anthony Rendon, have we?
No, we haven't.
Oh, shouldn't. That's for damn sure.
No. That's tough. That's a tough question.
That's a question going forward. We should also probably rank Hare at some point, because the Mets alone have some...
The Mets carry that division. I feel like...
Hare, again, I'm gonna stick up.
We should do an unfiltered on just handsome rankings by the division.
I would contribute to this heavily.
Okay.
I mean, I'm done. Like, I want to
ask a question since it came up and it seemed like I'm obviously an outlier here. Brett, what was it that stuck out? I mean, what is it about Arcia that you guys aren't into?
I question what his upside is. I mean, I think if he's a slightly lesser version of the good Alcides Escobar, is that fair? Do you think he can hit more home runs than that?
Yes.
Okay. What do you think?
I think he can hit for power more. So, I don't think he's gonna be. When I think of like someone who's a future Alcides Escobar, like if everything works out, I think of like Luis Sardinas.
Okay.
I think Arcia has a little more like gap power. I don't think he's solely a singles hitter.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you that he's a really, really good real life prospect. I just don't buy the fantasy impact. I you know how I feel about Schwarber. We don't need to get into that. But
no Schwarber talk.
No. But I, you know, Arcia.
No, I wasn't. Well, I'm not where Schwarber came up.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of. I guess best case is Arcia Eric Ibar. Best case.
I don't know.
Right now, or like for years? No. I mean.
No, in you know years. High single digits power, maybe 25 steals in a 25, 30 steals in a really good year and a batting average that won't hurt you?
I mean, I think he can actively help in batting average is what I would say. I don't know. Like, okay, Ibar's 2011. He had 10 homers, 30 steals, hit .279.
Okay.
That's pretty valuable. Out of 2012, he hit .290 with 8 homers and 20 stolen bases.
Yeah, Ibar.
That's really freaking good.
Ibar is underrated. That wasn't the comment wasn't meant to sell.
Arcia
short, but you know.
I think optimistically, you know, I think optimistically the 2012 IBAR season seems within reach.
Okay.
And when you consider, again, like IBAR, he struck out 11% that year. I think Arcia has that type of contact in him. That 290 goes even further. He walks 7% of the time thus far in the minor leagues. I don't know. So maybe he can consistently steal more often, you know, depending on his BABIP. But I don't know. I see a short thing, shortstop, a lot of stolen bases. I think he's getting stronger, so he's going to be able to at least have gap power. I don't know. I might swap him with Schwarber. That, you know, like these are not finalized rankings, but I don't have a problem with him, you know, 23 to 24 in that range.
Fair enough.
I think we don't really have current event. I mean
Chris Bryant hit a home run.
That's a good transition. Chris Bryant in the NL Central today faced Noah Syndergaard. Noah Syndergaard is the only item in terms of current events we have. Noah Syndergaard's in the majors.
He is in the majors.
He's fun. He's a lot of fun. I like watching
him. He's got great hair.
He does have great hair.
He does. No, it's. I mean, it's cool. Like he was pretty fucking nasty tonight.
Did we record before I think our last recording was before Swihart came out too.
Swihart also in the major leagues now.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Swihart, he of no batting gloves.
So do you guys
right now without batting gloves?
Do you guys like that? Do you guys not like that? I mean, what's your take?
That's a turn on.
But no batting gloves. It's a huge turn on.
I actually don't like it.
My only trepidation is that he's probably peeing on his hands.
I think it's a bit of a hard-o move, if we're being...
No, that was only Felipe Alou.
And Moises.
Whatever, yeah, that's... Okay. It's only the Alous.
To me, it's just like when you're a teenager and your mom's like, put on a coat, it's cold, and you're like, I don't need a coat, I'm tough. Like, you probably should have a coat. Like, coat can't really hurt you. It's kind of how I look at it.
It helps... It just says to me that it's a feel for hitting.
There have been a lot of shitty people without batting gloves. There have been a lot of shitty people with batting gloves, which is a fair counter. But,
mm-hmm. But I think that if you're, I mean, if it's a thing that turns you on, I completely understand it. Though I do understand it. I mean, if you like it rough and rugged, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I never doubted that, Mal.
Do you like it rough and rugged, or that you
no,
don't?
No, that you would. All right. Well, let's.
How do you think Enya likes it?
Tenderly. Oh.
No, we've established this. It's with syrup and grapes.
With syrup and grapes.
Welcome back to episode 49 of Tino. As always, let's send you out with a little housekeeping. If you're into daily fantasy sports, feel free to challenge any one of us on DraftKings at any given point. During the break, we were just lamenting the fact that somehow, while this podcast was being recorded, Brett rose up the rankings to beat all of us once again. Brett is the worst. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We've had a bunch of good reviews lately, but the more the merrier. And we'd love to get to 100 before the season is over. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast, like us on Facebook, and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett on Twitter at Dynasty Guru. You can find Mauricio at mrubio52. You can find Craig at CD, that's CD as in childish and disinterested Goldstein. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.
Why is Stephen Vogt a thing? I still don't get it. Like, why is it that? Why is he doing good things?
I want Mark Conrad to come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you also like Craig Gentry? You like a gentle touch, Ben. You like a gentle touch.
Maybe I just like being safe.
That's not how it came across when he was talking about Giancarlo.
No, it was not. Giancarlo's a very aggressive man. I feel like that would hurt for you.
Okay, we don't have to say that like you. I don't like how you said that.
Can we take a second and recognize the fact that since we started recording this podcast, I have passed you all in the DraftKings game, and I'm now in the top 10.
You passed me? Oh, fuck you, Brett.
Brett, who did you had Jacari
at a baby and Stanton.
Fucking ninja.
And Stephen Vogt.
How did you do that?
Because everyone
should vote. Oh, yeah, Stephen Vogt. That would do it.
I don't. Why is he doing things?
No, I'm still gonna beat you, Brett. I hate you so much. I'm gonna beat you.
You probably still will, but
I just had
Harper
hit a double, so I feel good about that.
Happa.
Jung Ho Kang, Brett.
Yeah.
Jung Ho Kang.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good call.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we can take this puppy on home.
Already down to 10th, Brett. Already fallen since you should talk.
That's all right. I got the 2 points for the Arrieta win banked as soon as this game ends.